don't know if anybody has like I would.
And what's it called again?
Our Wives Under the Sea.
Okay.
So it's this married couple, and one of them is like a deep sea diver, and this event happens, and I it's kind of very bizarre. I don't know. I was like, this doesn't make sense. I would like to know if somebody else, like I think I'm missing something. Like it had to have, like there needs to be like metaphors for like this being stuck in like the sea. I don't know. But anyways, that was a little interesting. And then I did read The Berry Pickers, which had been recommended several people. Amanda Peters is the author of that, and so thoroughly enjoyed that book. So I think maybe Chelsea was the one that had. And
I overheard Chelsea recommend that book when she was here.
Yeah,
at KXC one day. So I'll have to check that one.
Yeah, too. Very good. I really liked that one. And then I went through a series of like murder books, you know, because it was like spooky season. So like A Talent for Murder,
yeah,
which I guess is number three in like the series. So I maybe need to go back and do one or two, but okay. so much murder. And then Ask for Andrea was another murdery book as well. And that was fine. That was okay. But now I'm wanting something a little lighter. And now I'm listening to the Life Cycle of the Common Octopus, and I was telling you like it hasn't really picked up traction yet, that this might be one I just abandon ship on and, mm-hmm. and move on to the next one.
Yeah, that's a great question. When do you know when you need to quit a book?
Yeah,
you know
there's some that I've powered through and I'm like happy I did, and then others that I'm like why.
Yep.
I knew, you know, quarter that, you know, the way in, I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, especially if you get like over half and it's like, I kind of just got to stick this out. But
yeah,
you know, sometimes life is too short to read bad books or books that you don't enjoy anyway. Maybe it's not a bad book. It's just
not for you. And that's okay.
Okay.
I'm struggling with books with just like icky characters, like just, you know, like it's like they're not likable. Like,
mm-hmm.
and I made you read a book that it was like, I was like, this main character is just not a good person. You are not going to like them.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're just, there's nothing redeemable about them, but you know, it's fine. That's good. So if anybody, Our Wives Under the Sea, if anybody has read that, you can text in 218-326-1234. 'Cause I do not know what to make of this book.
It is 2 minutes after 8 o'clock on KAXE, and we receive support from ICTV. ICTV connects, informs, and empowers the community through diverse media. You can learn more at watchictv.org.
We'd also like to thank Schroeder Log Home Supplies, supplying wood home and cabin owners with specialty sealants, preservatives, and wood finishes. More information at their Grand Rapids store or online at loghelp.com.
You are listening to 91.7 KAXC Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXC Bagley, Bemidji. We are Northern Community Radio, people-powered radio in northern Minnesota, operating translator K210DR in Brainerd at 89.9. Find us at KAXC.org or ask your smart speaker. We need people like you to support this local media. You can text the word donate to 218-326-1234. Thank you so much for your support.
So did you see Chelsea's note here of that her friend in North Brainerd had 1,100 trick-or-treaters at their house?
Wow.
That is a lot of candy, a lot of little bodies there out.
Yeah.
And you said too.
I was at a trunk-or-treat event in Grand Rapids where we, at my church where we serve Sloppy Joes. Somebody said yesterday we served over 800 Sloppy Joes.
Wow.
But I'm pretty sure everybody that was there did not go inside necessarily for that, and definitely ran out of candy. I started with 500 pieces of candy, okay, which I knew wouldn't be enough, but there was, you know, plenty of backup, and got the backup reserve in and ran out of that around 7 o'clock. And
and
it was a constant stream.
And Kari, who was handing out candy kind of in the same neighborhood that you were in, she said that they handed out 1,200 pieces of candy.
Wow.
So that
is a lot.
Is a lot of trick-or-treaters. It was a nice night, though. We didn't have rain or snow, and it was cooler, but
it wasn't so windy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was outside by my car and had the full winter gear on just because I like to be warm rather than cool, and you can always lose layers.
Yeah.
So had that going on for Halloween night.
Well, that's good. So we'd love to know how many trick-or-treaters you had at your house. We had zero, but we weren't home.
Yeah, and a little bit sad, I just need to say, nobody came to KAXC on Friday. We kind of asked people to stop by, and we've got a lot of candy here. So if you still feel like, oh, I didn't get any Halloween candy, come on by.
We'll give you a little treat.
Coming up in a few moments, well, we're going to hear headlines from National Public Radio, and then Jim Gallagher, KAXE volunteer, has a short essay for us about old hunters and old hunting dogs. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Kari Hedlund, your host for Headwaters, her request line theme, songs about hunting. You can text those in as well, 218-326-1234. Reminder that there's elevated risk of wildfire today with windy conditions up to 30 miles per hour from the west, highs 50 to 54, sunny skies. And then tonight, increasing clouds, lows near 31. Cloudy tomorrow, highs 50 to 55.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. This is day 34 of the government shutdown. It's one day shy of equaling the longest on record, one that ended in January of 2019. NPR's Barbara Sprunt says Senate Democrats remain opposed to voting to reopen the government until Republican lawmakers agree to extend health care subsidies set to expire at the end of the year.
Democrats have been really lockstep in this, at least in public. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer has been able to keep his caucus together. The number of people who voted alongside Republicans to fund the government earlier on the eve of the shutdown has remained at 3. There's been a lot of discipline in messaging from the Democrats, you know, the focus on health care, talking about how Republicans will own the blame of a shutdown because they control Congress and the White House.
Republicans in Congress have repeatedly voted to reopen the government, saying that should be done before negotiating on those health care subsidies. President Trump tells CBS's 60 Minutes he won't be extorted by Democrats to get the government reopened. Open enrollment has begun on healthcare.gov, the Affordable Care Act marketplace. This year, there's been a lot of attention on federal subsidies for premiums, as NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin explains.
About half of the 24 million people who enroll in Affordable Care Act plans own or work for a small business. When they apply for a plan, they get a subsidy for their premium based on their estimated income. If they have a better than expected year, they have to repay some of the subsidy. This year, for the first time, there's no cap on how much people may have to pay back.
I'm beside myself.
Angel Strobel runs a small business in Georgia. She's reached out to her congressional representatives, both Democrats and Republicans,
to let them know, like, listen, you guys aren't talking about this. This is a huge deal.
She says small businesses could be blindsided by needing to pay back tens of thousands of dollars when they go to file their taxes. Selena Simmons-Duffin, NPR News.
This week, the U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments in two cases challenging the president's power to impose tariffs. Traditionally, that's been the prerogative of Congress. Michael McConnell represents one of the plaintiffs. He's also a constitutional law professor at Stanford University and a former federal judge.
I think there are good reasons why on an emergency docket where there is a district court order from a single district judge without full argument, without a full decision, I think the court has been deferential to the executive under those circumstances. But this is a fully argued case based upon an entire record and a final judgment. I think that the court is going to decide this according to the law.
He was speaking to NPR's Weekend Edition Sunday. The High Court will hear arguments in the two cases on Wednesday. This is NPR News from Washington. More airline flight delays were reported over the weekend at airports across the U.S. amid the government shutdown. There were dozens of flight delays yesterday at airports in Newark, New Jersey and Chicago, as well as Dallas and Houston because of shortages of air traffic controllers. Airports in Los Angeles and Miami also reported delays. Belgium's defense chief is threatening to shoot down the next drone that enters his country's airspace. As Terry Schultz reports from Brussels, drones have been seen repeatedly hovering over a military base that houses U.S. nuclear weapons.
For the second night in a row, drones were spotted flying over the Kleinerbrugge military base in northeast Belgium. That's one of the locations in Europe where the U.S. stores nuclear weapons. It's the third military base in Belgium where drones have been detected in recent weeks. Belgian Defense Minister Theo Franken, who has previously said he wants to take down any such unmanned aerial vehicles seen above bases, reports that a weapon that should have done that jammed in the latest incident. Franken says police tried to track the drones by helicopter and car, but they got away. The minister says he'll urgently ask the government for more resources to combat drones this week. For NPR News, I'm Terry Schultz in Brussels.
Yesterday's NFL games included the Jacksonville Jaguars beating the Las Vegas Raiders in overtime, 30-29. In that game, Jaguars kicker Cam Little set an NFL record by kicking a 68-yard field goal in the first half. Little broke the all-time mark held by Justin Tucker of the Ravens, who kicked a 66-yarder four seasons ago. I'm Dave Mattingly in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Walton Family Foundation, working to create access to opportunity for people and communities by tackling tough social and environmental problems. More information is at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
It is 11 minutes after 8 o'clock. Thanks for listening to the Monday Morning Show here on People Powered KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr with Sarah Bignall.
We receive support from Headwaters Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Bemidji, gathering at 10 a.m. on Sundays now through May at the Headwaters Peace Center. HUF is an inclusive space that seeks truth, practices love, and celebrates life. More at headwatersuu.org.
Support also comes from Grand Itasca Clinic and Hospital, home to an experienced OBGYN team that provides comprehensive women's health services, including maternity and advanced gynecology care, all in Grand Rapids. Learn more at granditasca.org.
The Curling Curl Misabi in Eveleth, they have an open house that is going now through the 6th from 6 to 8 each night. There's curling instruction and equipment provided. You have to bring clean athletic shoes and wear comfortable clothing and a light jacket. And the Arrowhead Library System presents They Brought Their Songs, International Folk Music in Minnesota, with musical trio Kaylee. That's going on now through November 5th. Find a full list of dates, times, locations at alslib.info.
And Election Day is tomorrow. 13 school districts in rural northern Minnesota are asking residents to support referendums and special elections this year. The KAXC News team has gathered information on these referendums and details on how to vote. Find that at kaxc.org.
And there is a fire warning for today that it is incredibly windy today with sunny skies, highs around 50 to 54. Wind gusts can be up to 30 miles per hour. And again, be cautious out there when it comes to if you're out, you know, doing yard work or whatever, probably shouldn't be burning the leaves.
No. Not that. And again, yeah, be very careful. Like we said earlier, even a four-wheeler can cause a spark on the grass. So just
be careful out there.
If you're going somewhere, you know, just make sure that nothing's sparking.
Yeah.
So, because that could be very, very dangerous today.
And increasing clouds overnight tonight. Lows will be near the low 30s. And tomorrow, cloudy, highs anywhere from 50 to 55. Light southeast winds, overnight lows in the low 30s with a slight chance of rain.
It is hunting season in northern Minnesota. And this morning, Jim Gallagher remembers a good dog and reflects on becoming an old hunter.
I had a Labrador retriever years ago that had reached his final years. He moved slowly and stiffly in the morning. His eyes weren't quite as bright as when he was a younger dog. At that age, I no longer sent him on any cold water retrieves or took him on ground-pounding pheasant hunts. But he still had the heart of a hunter. He couldn't stand to be left behind when he saw me with my gun headed for the door. So I found different ways to get him out in the field. It wouldn't require days of recuperation on his part. On a warm fall day, early in the duck season, I took the old dog out in my canoe for a morning hunt. I helped him into the bow of the canoe and coaxed him to lay down while I slid into the stern. He had spent many hours in a canoe with me in his 12 years of life, and he knew how the craft moved and bobbed in the water. As a pup, he had slept under my canoe seat on his first canoe trips. Now, at 80 pounds, he held the bow down with his weight and rested his chin on the gunwale. I paddled with my shotgun between my knees. We had hunted ducks for a dozen seasons in this same way. Ahead, a duck flushed off the water and came flying our way. I swung my gun and dropped the bird. The old dog perked up at the shot and started to whine at the sight of it on the water. With a couple of paddle strokes, I turned the canoe towards the duck. The old dog was beside himself and began yipping as I paddled toward the duck. I moved the bow of the canoe alongside the duck so he could reach down and pluck it out of the water. Water dripped off his muzzle and the duck that he held. He was just as excited by this highly assisted chauffeured retrieve as any of the many retrieves he completed as a dog in his prime. The simple act, however throttled down, gave him purpose and tapped into some deep dog emotion steeped into his breed. He was where he was supposed to be, at my side with a bird in his mouth. This was all that mattered. When I think about that morning hunt more than 30 years ago, I see my own future as a hunter in that simple act of paddling an old dog to pick up a duck from the water. Except I will be the old one in the bow of the canoe. Now, nearing 70 years of age, I still hunt upland birds, ducks, and deer. I give my fall days purpose by the rituals of walking in the woods or paddling the marshes of where I call home. I'll get up before dawn or come home after dark, but I expect less of myself. I no longer feel the need to venture out in a blinding snowstorm. I've done that. I know how it feels to have snow melt and drip down my back. Maybe this is wisdom, but it's mixed with an equal part of just giving myself a break. I no longer feel the need to bring home something from every hunt. I measure success by the beauty of the sunrise or in the otter that swam through my decoys. But like my old dog, I still get excited by downing a single duck.
That is Bemidji area writer, producer, and KAXE, KBXE volunteer Jim Gallagher with an audio essay called Old Hunters.
And if you have any hunting traditions or hunting tales that you'd like to share with us, that is our question of the week. You can pass that along to us at 218-326-1234. Or you can email in at comments@kaxe.org.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, hunting is that tradition thing. It's, you know, maybe the food you eat, the place you go, just a time-honored tradition. It's more important to you than actually, you know, getting a deer or things like that. So we want to hear those things. You can text in 218-326-1234.
And coming up, 9 o'clock, it is Headwaters, and your host today is Kari Hedlund.
That's right, and she's doing Request Line, as we do on Mondays, with a theme, asking for your song suggestions and tying into our question of the week. We want to hear songs about hunting.
Thanks.
218-326-1234.
I've been trying to think of one. And like
this, I can only think of is it 30 Point Buck? 20 Point that one?
Yeah.
20? Is it something Point Buck that used to always get played around hunting season?
And then there's like the youpers with the second week of deer camp.
Oh yeah, that one. Mm-hmm. I'm also thinking of Annie Humphrey has Eat What You Kill, about that. And
it'll be interesting to see what folks come up with. So if you have a recommendation of a song for the request line here, you can text that to us, 218-326-1234.
Coming up at 8:30, we'll have a special edition of the Up North Report. Megan Buffington looking at ways local organizations are dealing with food insecurity at this moment, especially as people with SNAP benefits are not receiving those currently. There's also at our website, our news team has put together a list of resources with food shelf locations and hours, also community meals that are available to people. Again, that's at kaxe.org. And if you see something that we should add to that list, email news@kaxe.org.
And if you love music or are interested in becoming an on-air volunteer DJ at KAXE, we are having some training sessions coming up, and we will have one on Wednesday, November 12th at KAXE, and we will have one in Bemidji at KBXE on Thursday, November 13th. Both of those classes run from 5:30 to 7, and if you're interested in attending, you can email dgannon@kaxe.org to confirm your attendance. And there is no obligation. You can go through the training, and if you're like, oh, this is something I'm really excited to do, you can do that. Or if you're like, yeah, it's not for me, that's fine. You're just learning a little bit more.
Yeah, kind of get the background of what we do here at KAXE and seeing how you can fit into that.
Yeah.
Right now, we're going to continue with some news from National Public Radio's Morning Edition. We're going to hear about the governor election in Virginia, and then ICE agents, and specifically in Texas, they're going to talk about.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Good Monday morning to you. Virginia voters are choosing a governor. The election ends on Tuesday. Some things are normal here. It's an off-year election, and those elections tend to lean against the party in power nationally. Virginia's race also has had some surprises. For example, a lot of Virginia voters are furloughed because of the government shutdown. Text messages from the Democratic candidate for attorney general have shaken this race, and Democrats are saying they intend to redraw Virginia's congressional map to counter President Trump's attempt to hold on to Congress. VPM News' Chad Khalil reports from Richmond.
Monday afternoon, the Virginia Capitol's six white columns are under a gray sky. Standing in front of them is Virginia's Lieutenant Governor Winsome Earle Sears. She's this year's Republican candidate for governor.
Well, all right.
A small crowd holds Winsome for Governor signs, but the Republican says it's not a campaign event. As Lieutenant Governor Earle Sears runs the proceedings of the Senate.
I am standing here today, not as a candidate, not on the campaign trail, but as your lieutenant governor, fulfilling my oath to speak for the people in our great Senate chamber and to defend the principles that make Virginia strong.
The Democrats in control of the legislature called a snap meeting. It was a reaction to Trump's push to get Republican-led states to redraw their congressional maps with a GOP advantage ahead of the midterms. Earle Sears says she'd rather be out talking to voters.
It's no surprise that this political power grab would come 1 week before an election. They want to hear from us, from our own mouths, what it is that we're about. They want to touch us and, you know, all that good stuff. And unfortunately, I can't do it. But you know who can? Abigail Spanberger is still going to be able to be on the campaign trail.
Abigail Spanberger is a former congresswoman and the Democrats' nominee. As Earle Sears spoke, Spanberger was on a bus tour in Southwest Virginia. It's one of the reddest parts of the state and just about as far as you can get from Richmond. It's difficult to know what kind of effect taking the Republican off the campaign trail may have had on the race. Henry Chambers Jr. is a constitutional law professor at the University of Richmond. He says strong candidates have a ground game with volunteers and staff knocking doors and talking to voters.
I'm not sure that the candidate, him or herself, necessarily needs to be out there doing the campaigning.
Earle Sears isn't the only one taken off the campaign trail. All 100 seats for the House of Delegates are up for election, and both incumbent Republicans and Democrats are in close races.
I imagine some people will be a little, they'll feel a little like cats on a hot tin roof.
Before lawmakers announced a redistricting meeting, about a million Virginians had already voted. Republicans are arguing that those early voters didn't have the chance to consider the redistricting effort when casting their ballots.
I submit to you they should have done it before the election started.
Congressman Morgan Griffith is one of the Republican members who could see their districts tilted against them next fall.
If they put something on the table as a constitutional amendment, you had an opportunity as a voter to throw the bums out.
A new congressional map in Virginia could give Democrats two more seats, but it would have to go through the next legislature too, and then on to voters in the spring. Spanberger, who has a comfortable lead in polls and a well-funded campaign, hasn't come out and says she supports the redistricting effort. But a spokesperson for her campaign gave NPR a statement. Tanisha Cameron said Spanberger thinks it's prudent the legislature keep all possible options open and that she looks forward to future discussion. For NPR News, I'm Jad Khalil in Richmond.
Federal immigration agents are seizing more people from county jails in some parts of the country. As Mose Bushell from member station KUT in Austin reports, it's a part of the president's immigration crackdown that most people cannot see.
In Texas, the national deportation push often runs through county jail. Since 2017, state law has required that county sheriffs hand people arrested on other charges over to ICE if a background check reveals they might be in the country without legal status. Some counties go further, entering into what are called 287G agreements, giving local cops the authority to detain people suspected of immigration violations. This has been going on here for years, but since the start of Trump's second term, it's happening more and more.
Texas is one of the highest rates of ICE arrests, and that's really being driven by the arrests that are happening in the local jails.
Jacob Kang Brown is a researcher who studies jails and immigration for the Prison Policy Initiative, a think tank that opposes mass incarceration. In Texas, he says almost 50% of new ICE arrests in the first half of this year are happening from county lockups. He's seen similar increases in other states, like Florida.
In contrast, states that have protections that restrict local law enforcement from collaborating with ICE, they generally have much lower levels of arrest overall.
The jail-to-ICE pipeline is not just growing in deep red counties in Texas. In Travis County, where liberal Austin is, Sheriff Sally Hernandez opposed increasing partnerships with ICE. But data from the Deportation Data Project shows the number of people flagged for immigration holds in jails went up about 40% in the first half of the year, reflecting statewide trends. Kristen Dark is a public information officer for the Travis County Sheriff's Department.
We want people to run to us, not away from us. If someone is a victim of crime, we don't want them to be afraid to talk to us.
The trend has also raised concerns over due process. Austin-based immigration attorney Iris Albizu says a lot of the people that end up in ICE custody from jail have been arrested for low-level offenses, like driving without a license. They're presumed innocent until their cases are resolved, but if they're deported, they don't have a chance to resolve them.
That person might be innocent for whatever they're charged with, but because now they're caught by immigration, they're trapped.
ICE did not respond to a request for comment, but the state's top Republican leaders have embraced the strategy of putting more local law enforcement on the front lines of the immigration crackdown. A program called Operation Lone Star tasked the Texas National Guard and state police to do immigration enforcement in 2021. When asked for comment on the rise in immigration enforcement in jails, Governor Greg Abbott's press secretary, Andrew Mahalaris, replied, "Governor Abbott fully supports the Trump administration's efforts to deport those who intentionally broke our laws and entered our country illegally." The thing is, says lawyer Iris Albizu, ICE is increasingly detaining people who are in the country legally or are pursuing permanent legal status.
What is shocking is that people that are already in the system, they already have a pending asylum application, family petitions by a U.S. citizen wife, and those people are being detained.
Their numbers will likely keep growing in Texas. Earlier this year, Governor Greg Abbott signed a law that will mandate that all county sheriffs further expand coordination with ICE. For NPR News, I'm Mose Bushell in Austin.
This is NPR News.
This is People Powered KAXC and the Monday Morning Show. I'm Jennifer Barr with Sarah Bignall.
Our thanks goes out to the Move It Real Estate Group, assisting clients with real estate purchases and sales for over 25 years, not only in Grand Rapids, but across northern Minnesota. Move to what moves you. More at moveitrealestate.com.
We also thank Grand Rapids State Bank, committed to serving the Grand Rapids area for over 110 years. More at grsb.bank. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender. Weather today, sunny, highs 50 to 54 with breezy west winds up to 30 miles per hour. There is an elevated risk of wildfire with these conditions. Be very cautious when it comes to fire. And then increasing clouds tonight, lows near 31 and cloudy tomorrow, highs 50 to 55. Looking ahead to Wednesday, sunny, a bit cooler with highs in the upper 40s.
So Jennifer, last week we got some exciting news around here that we've been accepted into Newsmatch, which is a national fundraising effort. It's a program in which we are able to match donations. So how this works is we got a what they call a Rural Partner Fund grant, which is $5,000. And we also got some local matches as well. So we have up to $25,000 that will be matched dollar for dollar for local donations that come in, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So we're running that now through the end of the year. So that is going on. So if you make a contribution to our year-end giving program through the end of the year, it will be matched dollar for dollar up to $1,000.
Excellent.
Yeah. So that makes those contributions go you know, that much further. And KEXE is one of 400 nonprofit news organizations that are participating in this 10th annual news match cycle. And the program really helps kind of rural or community-based news outlets build financial stability. And they can do that through local support that we have, as well as national support. And we were able to participate in this because we're an INN, which is an Institute for Nonprofit News Organization. And they're doing that to help sustain local newsrooms. You know, as we are very aware that there's a real need for local news, especially in rural communities. And mm-hmm. so it's nice that we're able to take advantage of this opportunity.
Excellent. So people can donate at KAXC.org.
Yeah, and that will be matched, you know, dollar for dollar.
Good news.
That is good news. And it's because we've had such an outpouring, too, of support over the past couple of months that, you know, we were able to establish that, hey, we'd have really strong local support. And, you know, it unlocks opportunities like that for us. So
thank you. Thank you for supporting KAXE and opportunities ahead for you too.
Yep. And we'll have more information on our website coming days here.
Right now it is time for the Up North Report. Megan Buffington is looking at food issues across northern Minnesota in a variety of ways.
For KAXE News, I'm Megan Buffington with the Up North Report. Tammy Larson had just finished a pickup of food from the Baxter Menards Tuesday afternoon.
Menards has been doing a food drive in the month of October, so we're picking up like week three of that. There'll be a little bit more for us to pick up at the end of the month. We got a big drop-off from Grand Casinos. They were doing a food drive just coincidentally also in the month of October. So that was a big thing.
She's the director of the Lakes Area Food Shelf in Pequot Lakes. The No Barrier Shelf recently announced plans to open a second location to serve Brainerd and Baxter. The area needs more access to food. And northern Minnesota nonprofits are feeling the weight of food insecurity amid a challenging economy, changes to important federal programs, and the government shutdown.
The food banks are struggling because of the USDA cuts to actually to get the food that they have before. So we have tremendously less food to pick from for ordering for our monthly orders from Second Harvest Northland. And that's challenging enough, right?
But like many food shelves, Lakes Area is also seeing more and more families. A year ago, Larson says they served about 150 to 180 families a week. This year, it's closer to 180 to 200. And a couple of weeks ago, they had 225 families come in.
Two Wednesdays ago, we had 9 new families. Last Wednesday, we had 15 new families. So those numbers are just unprecedented.
The recent uncertainty around SNAP benefits adds yet another layer. That's what's been on Kutaska Executive Director Marta Kerrigan's mind.
I think some of it is really right in front of us and people are really aware of it. I think the layers and the ripples worry me because I don't think that people have really felt the impact of those yet. I there's, you know, families sitting across from us that are in distress and it's really hard to see. Sorry, I probably get a little emotional here, but and I worry for my staff because that takes a toll on them too, to be wanting to help people and not have all of the resources or answers or things that people need.
The timing of this uncertainty only amplifies it. That's really the best word for it, uncertainty. Our economic outlook is unclear, but it doesn't feel great. Who knows when the government shutdown will end? Federal funding for long-running programs is up in the air, and it's all happening as temperatures drop in Minnesota. Energy assistance funds that families rely on for heating are expecting to be delayed by at least a month and not start until late November. The holidays are another compounding factor.
November is like Thanksgiving, which is a holiday like very centered around food. And so on top of people not being able to meet their like regular needs for like weekday meals and dinners, the closer we get to Thanksgiving, the more pressure there will be on individuals and families to meet those societal expectations of what should be happening.
But both Kerrigan and Larson have seen their communities coming together to meet the need. Kerrigan says that looks a little different everywhere. Typically, monetary donations are better for food shelves because they get better wholesale prices than the average person. But Coochaching County organizations say food donations are better for them right now.
It's good for people to kind of source out and figure out, what is my community need that I can do?
Kerrigan says she hopes through all this, the community has learned more about food insecurity.
And about ways that we can continue to support that, even after some of the more obvious part of the crisis has passed. Because those things are going to continue to exist, especially in rural communities.
To do our part, KAXE News has compiled a list of food resources for northern Minnesota. But we need your help keeping that list updated. We also need you to help us amplify our community's voices. Share yours by emailing news@kaxe.org. That's it for this special edition of the Up North Report. From the KAXE News Desk, I'm Megan Buffington, telling the stories of northern Minnesota through local news.
The Up North Report is made possible by Woodland Bank, serving the area since 1920 with locations in Grand Rapids, Cohasset, Hill City, and Deer River. Woodland Bank believes in building community and serving local nonprofits like KAXE.
You can find lots of local news stories at our website, kaxe.org, and the latest edition of the Up North Report airs at 5:30 this afternoon during All Things Considered. You can also subscribe as a podcast to the Up North Report.
Delivered conveniently to your device, and it's nice.
And speaking of podcasts, we have our new Season Watch pod with Charlie Mitchell, Heidi Holton, John Latimer, and going to have some rotating characters throughout that, and it's a podcast for the curious filled with the delights of nature. New podcast episodes come out on Thursday mornings, and then it's also airing on the weekends at about at 1:30 on Saturdays, 10:30 on Sunday mornings.
And they kind of have a theme to them. We've heard about owls, we had hibernation, or what were they calling, like the zombie frogs.
We talked about the color yellow and how it's, you know, showing up, or was showing up, especially with certain trees and and the tamaracks and things. So
So definitely check that out. Again, you can subscribe to that, and I have several podcasts that I subscribe to, so it's nice that they just are loaded right on your phone. And then
and it's about 30 minutes or less, so it's not a long one that you need to invest a lot of time in. It's fun.
You learn a little something, you chuckle a little bit. I think anything that Charlie's attached to, there's always a, you know, little puns and some humor in there.
And Charlie is just so joyful about nature. I love it.
She's a good counterpart to John Latimer, and you know,
who is also so joyful, but it's just like they work well together.
They do. So tune into that. Again, if you've been listening to the Phenology program for years, this is a different take on that, and nice work to Heidi and Charlie who pulled this together.
Programming on KAXE is supported by North in Bloom in downtown Grand Rapids, providing floral arrangements for all occasions and holidays throughout the year, also offering wedding consultations, flower subscriptions, and gift sets. More information at northinbloom.com.
Our thanks also to Hibbing Chrysler Center, serving the Northland for over 25 years on the Beltline in Hibbing. Their service center provides regular maintenance and major auto repairs weekdays from 7:30 to 5:30. More details at HibbingChrysler.us.
We're going to hear some new music now from Paul Kelly. He is an Australian singer-songwriter, I believe. And this one's called Rita Wrote a Letter.
I really don't know how I'm talking, 6 feet down and under the clay. The laws of nature forbid it, but I was never good with rules anyway. The day I walked out of prison, I knew that I was stealing stuff. For the crime committed, I was still doing time behind the walls between me and her. And the pots and pans, I was happy being busy again. And every night when I came home with my back and feet all aching sore, I lay there in Mary's spare room, toss until the break of dawn. To dwindle once they move further up the coast. Those silences that dragged on forever, I couldn't find the words I needed the most. One day I went to see an old friend, and I brought a little package home. For old time's sake, sweet oblivion, but some things you shouldn't do alone.
That is Paul Kelly with Rita Wrote a Letter from his upcoming album called 70 here on the Monday Morning Show on People Powered KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr with Sarah Bignall.
And coming up at 9 o'clock this morning, Kari Hedlund is in and she is your host for Headwaters today. And we have a bunch of interviews and conversations coming up this week. And tomorrow on Headwaters, you can hear Brainerd folk musician Kelly Smith. She'll be joining the program to talk about the upcoming Grassroots Concert Series in Nisswa. And Smith is the new artistic director for the series, and that began back in 1988. And Wednesday, you can tune in for a live session, an interview with the Americana band, Megan and the Birdwatchers, who recently released their second album, Americana Dream. And then finally on Thursday, tune in for the latest Spin That Ish. The music team will share some of their favorite musics from the past month. And that's always a fun conversation. So you'll want to tune into that.
Yeah, for sure. Bemidji community members are going to hold a tailgate pantry on Saturday from 3 to 5 in the parking lot of the Paul Bunyan Mall near Hobby Lobby. You can bring or take shelf-stable food or hygiene items. And we're going to be talking with some of the organizers of that event on the Thursday morning show this week. So we'll find out more then.
Tune in for that. And if you have any events going on, and they're collecting a list of resources too, if you know of food pantries and other things to help support people, our news team is compiling a list on our website, so you can send along that info to news@kaxc.org.
That is correct. Taking a look at our current temperatures. Hold on just a second. Okay, we've got 40 in Hibbing, 39 in Bemidji, 43 in Aiken. It's 41 in Brainerd. Looks beautiful outside, a bit breezy, but for today we are expecting sunny skies, highs 50 to 54, breezy west winds up to 30 miles per hour. Do remember, this means there's an elevated risk of wildfire, so be very cautious today. Increasing clouds tonight, lows near 31, and then cloudy tomorrow, highs 50 to 55 with light southeast winds. Our lows tomorrow night, low 30s, slight chance of rain. And for Wednesday, sunny highs in the upper 40s. Coming up next, we are going to hear a story from Morning Edition. Layla Faldo will speak with Knight Yoon, who was born in a refugee camp and went on to become an acclaimed chef. We're going to hear about the new cookbook, My Cambodia.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin.
I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Layla Faldin. Knight Yoon is a celebrated American chef known for bringing the flavors of her parents' ancestral home, Cambodia, to the United States through her restaurants. The one she has now is Lunette in San Francisco. She grew up in Stockton, California, and her parents never talked about their life in Cambodia and what they escaped, a genocide.
I learned about my parents' past by traveling. When I went to Cambodia, my goal was to meet my relatives. And I learned that over food, they would open up about my parents' past. I learned that my mom was a beauty queen in her village and my dad fixed motorcycles for the Japanese.
Her late father never found a way to truly open up to her, but her mother did.
Traveling to Cambodia and learning how to cook food was how my mom opened up about herself. Cooking Cambodian food has been a way of storytelling.
Now Yoon is sharing those stories and her recipes with the world in her debut cookbook called My Cambodia, a Khmer cookbook. And I know we typically say Khmer, but Yoon says it's actually pronounced Khmer.
My Cambodia is my story, my parents' story of resilience and strength. And I also wanted people to not forget like the good times in Cambodia when my parents were growing up, when there was Cambodian rock and roll music playing, when art was thriving. And I want to just put that in a time capsule and celebrate it.
And that's what she does in her cookbook. She recommends rock and roll playlists to dance to as you cook. And before we get to the stories she shares in the book, we've got to start with the food. On the day we chat, Yoon walks me through one of her favorite weeknight recipes, a chicken stir fry.
This is so exciting for me. You don't even know.
Yoon is in San Francisco. I'm in D.C., so we connect by Zoom, and I perch my laptop on the kitchen counter so she can walk me through the dish.
So chakreung, I get very excited about this dish. It's just very... because I grew up eating it, it's something that I still crave.
We start with the most important part of this cooking process, making something called kreung.
Kreung is one of the foundation in Khmer cuisine. Kreung translates to ingredients. You pound like thinly sliced lemongrass, there's turmeric, lime leaves, shallots, and galanga, and you turn that into this beautiful paste.
I mash everything with a mortar and pestle, which is an arm workout because there's so much smashing. I feel like I have a new right bicep. Basically.
Yes. What I recommended in the book too was to have a kreung making party, like invite all your friends to help make a big batch. And then the kuryong is also very versatile. You can use kuryong to marinate, to make soups and stews and curry. It's the base for a lot of our traditional Cambodian dishes.
At Yoon's instruction, I begin to saute my kuryong in a pan along with sugar and an ingredient you may need to find in a specialty Asian grocery store.
Rehok, which is the star in Cambodian cooking, it's like our fermented fish paste.
Mmm, that's smelling so good.
Yeah.
It's not ginger that we used, it's galanga.
Yes, it's galanga. Galanga is not as spicy as ginger. It has a much more like nutty, earthy taste.
So I can smell that. I can smell the lemongrass.
Lemongrass.
The garlic, okay. All kinds.
Nice.
Mingling together. Next, I add sliced chicken thighs and a mixture of fish sauce before turning down the heat. I chop up some red onions and chilies. I get nervous when like a real chef watches me cook.
This is fun. Seeing you go around the kitchen, grabbing like the onions.
It's amazing. And I'm excited because it's so delicious, but it's also something that can feel intimidating. Mm-hmm. And then like looking through your cookbook and going and shopping for the ingredients, everything feels more accessible now. Like, oh, I can do this.
I cannot wait for you to try it.
I stir in my onions and just a pinch of the chilies because I'm a heat wimp. Then I top it with basil and get ready to serve by scooping the jasmine rice I prepared earlier into a bowl.
Sometimes when I would miss home, I would just cook a pot of rice and have that. Sometimes I wouldn't even eat it, but just to fill my room with like the aroma of like steamed rice, it was just very comforting to me.
And my kitchen has that aroma, along with the garlic and lemongrass and the stir fry, which is done.
Yay, you did it.
And it has such a depth of flavor that is so different.
Uh-huh. The depth of flavor you're talking about is basically from the kuryong and the brahok together, which makes Khmer food so good.
Now, Yoon didn't grow up cooking Cambodian food, as she mentioned, but the recipes in this cookbook include the flavors of her childhood, from the recipe for a bright cabbage salad to
Ketio Phnom Penh, which is the pork noodle soup. When my mom would make a big pot of soup, we knew she was going to make it ahead of time because she would start prepping like the fried garlic and she'd pull out the biggest pot. So it was like a very joyful time.
And her book is full of both the joy and the trauma of her parents' history. Your parents are genocide survivors. You were born in a refugee camp. You came here when you were two.
Yeah. So my parents fought for their lives when they fled Cambodia around 1978. My parents like dodged landmines, survived starvation to like forced labor camp, walked under the hot, hot sun to safety so my brother and I could have a better life in America. I didn't learn this as a child at all, but I knew something, like there was this mystery that, you know, they hid from my brothers and I. But I've always like looked up to my mom. Like I just knew her strength and her determination came from somewhere.
Khmer cooking, Cambodian cooking, sharing it with the world in this cookbook, in your restaurants, why was it so important?
I wanted to share my story. It's something that not a lot of people talk about or know about. And I think that's why Cambodian cuisine is so in the shadow of like Thai and Vietnamese food, because we were in the civil war and everything was lost during that time. So people who held on or had like, you know, who knew how to cook Cambodian food, they just kind of perish. And people who do know Cambodian food now hold it in their memories. I just wanted to share the beautiful side of Cambodia. So this book is a way for me to kind of compile all the recipes that I learned from my travel and from my mom to honor their stories and to make the food accessible.
And as Night Yoon writes, if you want to connect with your parents, grandparents, friends, anyone really, I hope this book will help you create the space for conversations, both loving and difficult. Her debut cookbook is called My Cambodia. This is NPR News.
It's 8:53. Thanks for listening to the Monday Morning Show here on People Powered KAXC. I'm Jennifer Barr with Sarah Bignall.
Our thanks goes out to the Timberlake Restaurant in Grand Rapids, featuring Martini Monday each week from 5 to 8. More info is available at TimberlakeLodgeHotel.com.
We also thank Paul Bunyan Communications, powered by the GigaZone, offering fiber optic fast internet speeds up to 10 gig and GigaZone Wi-Fi to support devices wirelessly. Paul Bunyan Communications, Northern Minnesota's local broadband cooperative. Coming up at 9 o'clock, Headwaters with Kari Headland. She is doing the request line on this Monday, as we do, songs about hunting. We heard from Jen, who said, who suggested Fox Hunt by Sierra Farrell, and Dave from Shevlin, who said Poachers by Tyler Childers. Those are a few of the suggestions, or the two suggestions we've gotten so far. So you can text in yours as well, 218-326-1234.
And election day is tomorrow. There's 13 school districts in rural northern Minnesota that are asking residents to support referendums in this special election. And the news team has gathered information on these referendums, and you can find out more info at our website, kaxe.org, and they'll be posting results and stuff as well on Wednesday. So,
yeah, that's right. You know, I don't have anything to vote for this election, so I kind of am like, oh, it's nothing's happening. But there are definitely things happening. So if you're not sure, you can check out KAXE.org or also the Minnesota Secretary of State website, mnvotes.com.
.gov.
Yeah. And just search for Minnesota Secretary of State, and you can type in your address, and it will let you know exactly what is on your ballot, if you have a ballot.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And they actually have sample ballots usually on there. So you know exactly what you need to be, so you can inform yourself, right?
Yep.
So you're not going in blind going into the voting booth. You know what's on there, and you can do some research and get educated up.
Yeah. And use your voice and vote tomorrow if you have something to vote for. We're going to hear some new music right now. It's from Josh Ritter. This one's called Honeydew.
Legend, Minnesota way back when, taken from the rich and given to your friends, and your friends were the poor, up and down the line, they might inherit the world a little bit at a time. There are places on the upper plains no comfort's ever been. You made a holy mission out of laying siege to them. You were spotted in Bemidji, you escaped from Grand Marais. Everywhere you wanted, there you wanted all the way. Dark days lead to dark nights. Day. And some mysterious illness caused his wife to waste away. Took the bottle that you left, at the door said take a drop. Your prayers have all been answered, now pick up your bed and walk. Take the tale of the banker man from Lake of the Woods. Like the devil himself had come to town, dressed up a snake as best he could. You chopped his tail, let him live, his neighbors burned his bags. He came to town in purple, now he's leaving in rags. Dark day. Lead the dark years. No light. By a myth to believe in someone, though you don't gotta know where someone is. So I've never known your whereabouts. I always
always know you're there. Among the ones with nothing given, what you have to share. First the cops came, then the feds came, then the army came, the men who wore no uniform, saying who they might have been. I told them all the same thing, I didn't have to lie. I said I couldn't give you up no matter how hard I try. Dark day.
That is Josh Ritter with a song called Honeydew No Light. I was surprised to hear he mentions Bemidji, Minnesota in that
song. And Grand Marais and Lake of the Woods. And
I had heard the song before, but never listened very carefully, yeah. I guess. And I was like, oh my gosh, Josh Ritter's talking about Minnesota.
And that he is. And you can hear more new music coming up on Headwaters, which is coming up in just a minute or so. And you are listening to the Monday morning show. And taking a look at weather for today, it is going to be breezy with gusty winds up to 30 miles per hour.